The green room is traditionally where you gather before the event occurs. What we tend to do on multimedia is we do all the bits for the programme and go, oh, bloody hell, the green room. And so, I'm not quite sure. Is the green room still... You can go to it afterwards, I suppose, can't you, really?
But, yeah, you often do, yes.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we are in the green room afterwards, but you're going to hear it before. That's the joy of technology, isn't it, really? And in this month's multimedia, we've got some quite good things. Actually, no, that's not, we must talk about what's going to come up in the programme, shouldn't we? That's a bit silly.
Should talk about what we've been doing, actually. Yeah, since we last spoke, I've been on holiday for a couple of weeks, so that's 2 weeks out of the way.
That's right. And you did all the holiday on last minute or on the internet before you went, which meant the program came together a bit quickly.
Holiday came together pretty quickly. If you weren't listening last month, I booked the holiday Monday afternoon. We flew out Wednesday morning. Do not attempt this at home. It's not easy. All of a sudden, it's like Monday afternoon, we're going on holiday. Tuesday, I was at work all day. So Wendy, my wife, had to try and organise everything in my absence, do all the packing and stuff, because, like, Wednesday morning, we're off.
And
we had a show to do as well.
Did you take your computer with you? Were you browsing the internet or going to internet cafes, or were you totally cold turkey for the 2 weeks?
I popped into couple of different internet cafes, and one of the things that's great that you're able to do on holiday now is that you go into an internet cafe, you've got a digital camera, they've got a card reader, you slot your card in. I was able to send some great pics of Sam playing in the sand and on the beach and... paddling in the waves and then sitting back afterwards with a cocktail.
Sam?
Yeah. You want to see the picture? We can put it up on the site if you like.
Yes, send it to me before Wednesday. Yes, we'll get it up.
Okay,
definitely.
But so that's really good. The bit of technology that we used the most, we took two iPods with us, his and hers iPods. And interestingly, my newer one broke while I was away. Luckily, it's still under warranty, so that's been away and been swapped over and got back again. But the thing that really, really helped us was just on an off chance, I put the soundtrack of Joseph and His Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat on the iPods because I know, thought it might be useful for Sam. And it was like the digital babysitter. It was wonderful. He loves it. You could, in the afternoon, if he's, getting a bit ratty on the beach, you stick the headphones on his head, he just lies down on the sun lounger, put Joseph on, and that's him gone for an hour and a half. It's great.
Really?
Absolutely fantastic.
One of the joyous things about iPods, where the programme is being put together, and Mark and I are sitting about 400 or 500 yards as the crow flies downstream, is Hampton Court Palace. And Hampton Court Palace is one of the many royal palaces across London which have these digital audio guides. And for the most part, they're free. You just turn up and you get the headset and the little box. There used to be a CD-ROM that played, but now they are purely hard digital. And basically, you wander from room to room. The infrared in each room sets off the new audio. And they're extremely well done and they're extremely popular across all the main palaces. But the joyous thing about iPods and what's happening now is that more and more people are doing their own museums and palaces like this. And so if you're going somewhere, you can actually do a quick Google search and you'll find lots of MP3 things. So if you're going to see a museum or an art gallery, you'll often find the audio to go along with it and put together by just somebody who's really keen on it. And one or two of them I've heard for the National Gallery are absolutely wonderful.
I love the way that things are starting to spread as well as podcasting and as MP3s over the internet take off. Something can spread like wildfire. Somebody will say something about, they'll put something, somebody will mention it, and it'll spread and it'll spread and it'll spread and it'll spread so quickly. For instance, I subscribe to the what can only be described as the scurrilous gossip sheet, Potbitch, mm-hmm. Which is quite famous because it's extremely libelous. How they get away with it, I don't know. But it pointed me towards something that was fantastic, which was Paul Anker. He was a famous Brill building singer-songwriter in the late 50s, early 1960s, had a big hit with Diana.
Mm-hmm. And Old Carol, I Am But a Fool.
No, he wasn't. No, that was Neil Sedaka.
Oh, is it? Oh, right.
Well, yeah, sorry. Yeah. But I'm showing my age now, aren't I? But one of the things that we had... that were mentioned in Pop Bitch this week was Neil Sedaka. Paul Anka's got a new album out, and he's doing covers of modern rock songs.
That's right.
And his version of the it's like a sort of Frank Sinatra big band version of Nirvana's "Smells Like Teen Spirit." It's fantastic. I really like it.
And I heard that about a month ago, I guess. But I would imagine I only heard a small segment of one of the tracks, and then I had the feeling that the whole album would be just a bit too much to cope with anyway.
Well, the production on it is fantastic. It's brought back somebody, you know, the arrangement used to be all important in jazz records, in orchestra records, and the arrangements are fantastic. The recording's excellent because it's on Verve, which is a great jazz label. And yes, you'd probably say it does get a bit much, but I instantly headed over to my downloading MP3 area of choice, which is allofmp3.com, which is actually a Russian site. And lo and behold, they had the full album there, downloaded it, cost me $2 US, about £1. And on the iPod, and it's great. So I just love the way that stuff spreads organically through the internet and through word of mouth.
If you want to find the Pop Bitch website, it's Pop. If you want to find the Pop Bitch website, it's popbitch.com. And also other ones which are worth looking at. Rocking Vicar is a wonderful. If you like music, especially from the 60s and 70s, UK music, the rockingvicar.com is just worth going to. And lots of people in the business actually supply anecdotes and stories of the old days. And there's one more, and that's holymoly.com. Holy Moly, in some respects, is a slightly more grown-up and slightly less libelous version of Pop Bitch, but not much. And that's holymoly.com, H-O-L-Y-M-O-L-Y.
It wouldn't be difficult to be less libelous than Pop Bitch, I'm sure. By the way, if you want to drop me a line, it's bfbsmm for multimedia, bfbsmm@gmail.com. That's an address we use purely for people that are listening to The Green Room on the podcast as opposed to people normally writing into the show. So if you're listening somewhere wild and wacky, we've already had people listening from the Australian outback and from California, wherever you are in the world, and if you're enjoying the show, please drop me a line, bfbsmm@gmail.com. And don't forget, when you're listening to the show, you can win a fantastic digital doorbell that you can connect to your computer and upload your own samples to. What more could you ask for? BFBS Multimedia. Hello, and whether you're listening to one of 33 FM transmitters around the world, as a podcast, or via the BFBS Radio 2 Listen Again feature, welcome to August's BFBS Multimedia. It's your user-friendly guide to technology, computers, and the internet. I'm Mark Phillips.
And I'm Dave Raven. Are you an eBay virgin? This month, we'll help you break your duck.
Have we got a gadget for you? In our proud tradition of bringing you products you never thought you could plug into a PC, we present the Byron Digital Doorbell, and you can win one in this month's competition as well.
Ding dong, Avon calling. Is your PC filling up with files? We'll tell you how to get rid of those temporary files that aren't.
And is it a Walkman or is it a phone? Well, the Sony Walkman phone is, of course, both, so why haven't we got one? Find out. Plus, we have the latest tech news from Paul Trotter of PC Pro. All of this, plus your emails and queries and questions, right here on Multimedia. BFBS
Multimedia. Next on Multimedia, eBay. We've all heard about it, it's talked about on the news, and yet I'm continually surprised by the number of people who say, I'm too nervous to go on eBay, it's all a bit scary really, and I tried to register and I got all tied up and confused. So if you're an eBay virgin and want to break your duck, listen carefully, because this month and also next month, I'll be looking at how to register and sign up for eBay, how you should make your first bids, and then next month the finer details of how the eBay star system works, and other clever tricks to get the best out of your eBay. Let's start at the very beginning, shall we? To get on eBay is very simple. You don't have to sign up for it, and I guess many, many people have actually been to the eBay website at ebay.co.uk and had a look around. If you want to do anything like make a bid for an item or anything like that, you then have to sign up for eBay. Now, I would recommend that you sign up for eBay and for PayPal well in advance, because it can take a bit of time. There are quite a few forms and various things to do, and if you are trying to rush because you've seen something on eBay which is about to expire and the auction end in less than an hour's time, this is not the time to be going onto eBay to sign up for the very first time. So wait until you've got about an hour or so of clear time and your head is on properly and you're thinking straight, and sign up for eBay. You'll need your credit card details to hand, because they'll ask for those, and also critically write down your eBay username and password as soon as you sign up. You'd be surprised at the number of people I've dealt with who, when I say, "What is your eBay password?" and they say, "Oh, I don't know, I've forgotten now." So it's definitely worth writing it down. Now, you mustn't worry about giving your credit card details online. eBay is inherently extremely safe, and they need your credit card details so they can validate that you are who you say you are and you live where you say you live. And the best way of doing that is via the credit card. It's also the way they take any money off you when you sell items on eBay and you have to pay them the commission. As soon as you've signed up for eBay, bite the bullet and immediately sign up for PayPal. In fact, normally when you do sign up for eBay, at the end of it says, "Do you want to open your PayPal account now?" And the answer is definitely yes, because PayPal is a very simple way of being able to pay for the goods that you buy on eBay, and also when you sell things, to allow people to give you the money quickly. It means it's instantaneous, so if you buy something on eBay, you can click on PayPal and the seller immediately knows that that money is guaranteed. It's like having your own credit card system, and it means the goods can be dispatched straight away and no waiting for the check to arrive in the post and then the 3 or 4 days as the bank clears it. And the same thing works when you're selling items on eBay, which we'll discuss next month. Again, you will know straight away that the payer has paid the money in and you can dispatch the items. It's also good practice to make your PayPal password different from your eBay password. It's that extra level of security, but do ensure that you write them down. Okay, now you're registered and ready to go, and you'll find now that when you click onto eBay and log in, you can do far more than you could do before when you were browsing as a guest. You can have many more items in your watch list, and more importantly, of course, you can place a bid for various items. Okay, where to start? I would suggest that you break your eBay duck with something which is not particularly expensive. In fact, in many ways, I would recommend going on eBay to buy something that you don't really want. I'll give you an example. Many people start the items up on eBay at £1 or £1.50, knowing it's going to go much, much higher. And so it's worth, when you see something coming up on eBay and it's got 6 or 7 days still to go before the auction ends, make a bid. If they're asking £1, it doesn't matter. Put £1.10 in. Just get the feeling of see how it works. You can put £10 in. If, say, it's going to be something like a computer that's come up on eBay, it's definitely going to go for more than £10. So make your bid £10. And when you do that, you will see how initially it just goes up to the next 10p or 50p up, £1 or £1.50. But it's the equivalent of if you were in an auction room and had to leave the room, you could say to your friend, "I'm willing to spend as much as £10, but no more." And so you leave the room, and the item, of course, keeps on going up and up in price, and your friend bids on your behalf up to that maximum of £10. It's a very good system. It means that you can make bids on eBay without having to actually sit there all the time waiting for counter bids coming in and everything else. It also means you, in your own mind, can set the price you wish to pay. Now, having said that, the number of times I put my maximum bid is X, and when it gets there and I get an email back saying, "You have been outbid," the number of times I go back in and creep it up to X plus a bit is quite a bit. But of course, that's something you can choose to do yourself. The clever thing about eBay is once you've made your bid, you'll get an email confirming that your bid has been accepted. And if you make the bid for much greater, say £10 on a £1 item, eventually you will probably get an email saying you have now been outbid, and it's up to you to go back and reset those bids. The difference between eBay and ordinary auction rooms is that in an ordinary auction room, the item will keep on being sold as long as there is somebody sticking their hands up in the air or phoning in their details via a telephone line. And so it's only when there are no other bids and the auctioneer has exhausted all the permutations does he then go, "Going, going, gone." eBay is different. It couldn't, when you think about it, work that way. So eBay is a timed auction. The items go up for a fixed time, 7 days or 10 days, and therefore you can see an end time approaching. A lot of people hold back, and they make a bid at the very last minute. it causes a lot of bad feeling. Imagine the situation. There's you and I bidding on the same item. We both want it. I'm going £1, you're going £1.50, I'm going £2, and so it goes on. And we get towards the end of the 10-day thing, and we're both watching, and one of us is a little bit behind. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, comes the final person in the final seconds of the auction and puts in a bid bigger than both of ours and leaves us no time to get back in to put a higher bid in. It's called sniping, and it's not something I would recommend doing. I often do come in very late with a bid, but I counter that by having made a bid much earlier on. So let's take a 6-day item. I'll come in, say, on day 2 and make a bid, and then watch the other people as they overtake me and keep on going. But at least if I sneak in the final seconds and place the final bid, which wins me the auction, it does mean that people can't say I was sniping because I was there much earlier on. Okay, so we've made a few bids now, a few sample bids, but haven't bought anything yet. I think the time really to end this first part of how to survive and get by on eBay is to place your first bid. Find something you want. Make sure the shipping charges aren't too extortionate. You often find two similar things up on eBay, but one person's charging £1.50 for postage and packing, and somebody else is charging £10. So it's always worth looking at the postage and packing prices. And also, of course, as you're overseas, check that they can send to BFPO, but it probably is worth setting things up so somebody in the UK gets the items on your behalf. It's much better and much more guaranteed. So having found your item, place your bids, and then watch eBay as it gradually comes towards the end. And if all goes in your favour, you will end up the winner. Then you will receive an automatic email from eBay saying, congratulations, you are now the winner, and a little button saying, pay now. You click through to the eBay site of the item that you were bidding on, and then you will see an option saying, pay now. Click on that link, and it'll take you to your PayPal pages, and once again, you just ensure that the amount and also the postage and packing that they have asked for are all included, and click on the pay button, and it's as simple as that. Okay, I'm going to give you 4 weeks now to break your eBay duck and have a practice and get registered. And in part two of eBay, coming up next month, I'll be describing how to sell your items on eBay and get the maximum publicity for them, and how the feedback system works so you can get a rough guide of the person buying or selling and their trustworthiness. That's all coming up next month. In the meantime, happy bidding! It was 1978 in Germany that I got my first doorbell that played various tunes, but they sounded like a stylophone and weren't very good. Technology's moved on a lot, and you've got the latest incarnation of a doorbell.
Yeah, I suppose I should give you a bit of background into this. You know how you're sort of browsing around the internet sometimes, and you just bounce from place to place? And I was looking at, well, a friend of mine had this really funky doorbell, so I started looking at doorbells on eBay.
As you do.
And then, you know, I couldn't find anything I liked, so then I thought, I wonder if anybody's come up with a digital doorbell. So I put digital doorbell in, and lo and behold, up comes the website of, I think it's C.H. Byron, doorbell manufacturers, and guess what they've got? The first, as far as I'm aware, the first computer-connectable digital doorbell. This is, and I just had to go and get one. I phoned them up and said, can you send us one for the show? And they said, certainly, sir.
Now, the idea I can understand, of course, with the memory cards being so cheap these days, you can just put a memory card inside the machine or a memory stick inside the machine, and then, of course, everything else can be put in there and loaded as MP3 files. So you can have anything you like as a doorbell ring then, presumably.
Well, that's right. I mean, it is an actual sample. So you can upload a sample. It comes complete with a wire and some software, and you can put plug the wire into your serial port if you've got one, of course. I know some modern machines haven't. You might need to get a converter for that. You plug the other end into your doorbell, you load the software up, and you can upload pretty much any WAV file that you like. So anything, that whether it a bit from a record or a bit from an old film or something like that, can be your doorbell. And they've put a whole batch of them on there already, if I can get it to work. Let's have a look. That's the volume control. We don't want it too loud, so we'll press that. This is the front doorbell sound. That's one of them. But
sounds,
I think it comes
very
with about 15.
Japanese-y, that, yeah. Yes.
Let's see what else they've got. vintage jingle
now
bells.
Then, they were both about the same duration. Is the doorbell, does it have to be a fixed duration sound?
No, you can upload 3 samples to it, 2 of which have to be 8 seconds or less, like
yes.
This cockerel.
Yes.
But the third one can be up to 30 seconds long, so that gives you a pretty good amount of stuff you could put on there.
I've got some people who I know do mad things on their answer phone machines, so I can see how they would do similar mad things on the doorbell as well.
Exactly, and it looks pretty swish as well. Listen to this.
Now, you're playing that from the doorbell.
That is the doorbell. That's a preloaded sample that comes on the doorbell.
And just holding it to the microphone. But, of course, if you actually load the sounds in...
Oh, sorry, if it's your birthday, boy. All right, the only problem is you can't get it to shut up.
If you load the sounds in, you would get this sort of quality, I guess. So that's the concept behind it. You could just choose any tune you like and have it played, I suppose.
Yeah, I was thinking, what could I do? So I sort of rifled through my CD collection. I found Ring My Bell, which is fairly obvious.
Yes.
Of course, there's another obvious one, which was Wings. And
someone knocking at the door. Somebody ringing the bell.
Oh, it's interesting, the people coming to your door absolutely scary, yes.
And then I thought, well, okay, well, I thought about you could have something like Humphrey Bogart from Casablanca saying something like, you played it for her, now play it for me, or yeah, something like that. And then I went to a scratchy old single of the Boomtown Rats, and I thought, after a hangover, this would be really unwelcome if it went like this.
You're right, yes.
So we thought, we've got a couple of these to give away. Those nice people at Byron have given us some of these to give away, and it's easy. If you want to win one... by the way, I should mention as well, you can have a different sample play at the back door. So if somebody's at the back door and presses the bell, it'll play. You can make it play a different tune to the front door.
So you can wire in two buttons, basically two doorbells, front and back.
Exactly, and they'll play different tunes. And you can either have it on a rotating, so it'll play a different one every time somebody comes to the door, which may be a little irritating when it goes to the annoying
maybe
ones.
Maybe a little irritating, yes. It's extremely... Sorry to interrupt, but it's extremely well made. I mean, many doorbells are just sort of cheap white plastic, but this actually, there's a lot of weight in it, presumably that's the batteries, but actually it's beautifully finished. It's a good solid, it's plastic, but it's a lovely solid case. And it's got a nice design, sort of art deco feature to it, so it'll sit in your hall quite happily, I guess.
Yeah, a bit of real glass on there as well, and it's even got a digital display so that you know which sample it's going to play for you.
Right.
But as I say, we've got some to give away, and we thought, okay, now we've been having a bit of fun thinking, what can we load onto our doorbell? And so if you win, one of the things we can load on for you is a BFBS multimedia jingle, so that when people come to the door, you can tell them that you listen to BFBS multimedia.
We could even extrapolate that a bit further. We could even say, we'll actually do the link saying, and Mickey Smith won this doorbell on multimedia.
We could too, couldn't we? How sad would that be?
Yes.
And we thought, okay, well, people must have some great ideas as what you would like to stick on your doorbell or even on somebody else's doorbell to wind them up. What would you like when somebody presses the button to your door? What could it play? And it could be a line from a film or a sample from a TV show. It can be the theme tune to something. It can be a line of music. It could be a bit of classical music if you want. Anything you like at all, and it'll play it.
I think in an ideal world, we would say just send your entries to multimedia at bfbs.com. But actually, in an even better than ideal world, what we should say is it won't improve your chances of winning, but it'll make it much more fun if you can actually send a bit of audio of that as well. So it's not compulsory, but it would be nice. So when you've decided what you'd like on your doorbell, capture that audio from somewhere, and if you don't know how to do it, find somebody who can, and just send that as a little MP3 file. And then if you win and you've got sent the MP3 file, we can play that on the show next month as well, which is a good idea. What price did you have? You mentioned the price.
No, I haven't. They're very reasonable, actually, for what they are. Isn't it? Extremely well built. They come in at around £40, and considering, you know, a bog standard ordinary doorbell is about £12, £15, sometimes even £20, that I think it's remarkably good value.
Have you spoken to the people from Byron about their bell?
No, they were a little surprised to find some interest, actually. I think
because it's I find it, because it's obviously a company who makes doorbells, is it?
It is, yes.
Who've moved into digital doorbells rather than somebody who does digital type things, who thought, well, we could make a doorbell out of this, because it's a nice concept and it's British as well.
Okay, as always, the address is multimedia@bfbs.com if you want to send your entry in. You don't have to send us a sample of audio. If you do, we'd love to play it. If you can't, that's fine. Just put it in writing what you'd like your doorbell to say. BFBS Multimedia.
Every month on Multimedia, we say if you have any questions or queries or problems, let us know to multimedia@bfbs.com. And every month we get the odd few coming in. Some Mark and I answer directly because they are problems and difficulties people are having which are peculiar to them. But I was dealing with somebody this month and they said to me, my laptop is just filled up. I've got no idea where all the space has gone. Can you advise? And so I went in and found his laptop was full of temporary files. Microsoft Office has a habit of filling machines up with temporary files, doesn't it?
It does. It generally, what Office will do is when you open a file in Office, that it creates a temporary file so that should the worst happen, you can always go back, especially in the later versions of Office. There are other things which really bulk up the size of files as well. But generally, I go in and do a temp file clean about once every couple of weeks anyway, because it's just a useful thing to do.
And that is, I think, the thing that this person hadn't done, and also had done an awful lot of documents. So therefore, these number of temp files had grown. And, of course, if they've got pictures in them, and more people are adding their load, their company logo and things, you end up with much, much bigger temp files, don't you?
Yeah, I've sometimes seen people send me single-page Word documents with a little tiny logo in, but the actual document is a megabyte or more, and the reason is they haven't resized that logo. Although they've made it smaller, what they've said is stick a great big logo in there and make it look small. So they've shrunk it down, but they haven't actually changed the size that the original is. So therefore, it's still a great big thing. You're just looking at it in a very small way.
If somebody thinks my computer is starting to clog up and it seems to be the hard disk is filling up, how can they find, because these temporary files are for the most part difficult to find and in some cases are invisible, aren't they?
Most of them you can find by doing a search using the built-in search in Windows. That's the cheapest way to do it, is to basically you go into Windows Explorer, you go to search, you search for files, when it says search for files of name, you make them star .tmp. Now, the most common temp files are normally called .tmp at the end, and star at the beginning means basically anything followed by .tmp, and that should give you a great long list of temp files.
Will that show you the invisible ones as well?
There's normally an option, especially if you're running Windows XP, if you want to find more files once you've deleted that batch that it's found, you can then say, look, show whether hidden files are included, and you can then look for hidden temp files.
You can do that in the folder options. You can show the hidden files, and then you can then find all the temp files accordingly thereafter, yes.
Also, another tip is that if you've got the fast save option switched on in Office, that is a real nightmare, because it's designed, in theory, to make it easy so you never lose any work. So it's constantly saving copies of your document. The problem with that is that it's saving these things all the time, and they're getting bigger and bigger and bigger, because every time it saves it, it adds another version of your document to it. So consequently, the file sizes balloon, so it's not a good idea to have the automatic fast saves option on. To turn it off, the easiest way is to go to the help menu, which is just hit the F1 button in any Office application, and look for fast save, and it should then give you the option. It's normally under tools options, and it's one of the tabs there, and one of the things you can do is actually turn off fast saves. Again, the later versions of Office cope much better. For instance, if your machine crashes halfway through a document, they tend to be quite good at recovering it anyway, which is where the temp file comes in. If you crash in Word 2003, say, or you pull the plug on your computer and you start again, it will often, when you start up Word the next time, it'll say, I've got a recovered document, do you want to see it? And it'll show you where, it may not be exactly everything that you've typed, but it should be at least a chunk of what you've lost, or what you would have lost. So it's getting quite good at recovery.
Any more questions about how to find those hidden temporary files, or any other queries you might have which are making your PC run a little bit clunkily, just don't forget, multimedia@bfbs.com, and Mark and I will do our best to answer them.
I don't know if you've heard about this, but Sony Ericsson have just brought out the first Walkman-branded phone. Mm. This is a phone with a built-in MP3 player. And to be honest, from what I can see at the moment, it's a bit of a branding exercise in that, but the significant thing is that brand. It's the first phone that's a real, genuine Walkman. And so it's going to be interesting. I'm sure Apple are going to be bringing out an iPod phone before too long. But as I say, I think the key thing is this is recognition that up until now, Sony Ericsson, there were two companies, Sony and Ericsson, they got together. And up until now, it's really been the Ericsson side that's been pushing the phone technology. And they've been sitting back and waiting to launch this this brand. And let's face it, just think how successful the Walkman was. Mm. Ultimately, I don't think it's this particular product that's exciting. It's the fact that Sony are recognising that people want an all-in-one gadget. Ultimately, I mean, the phone that they're selling, the WM800, only has about half a gigabyte of... it has a memory stick with it, which has half a gigabyte of RAM, which isn't a huge amount. It's the same as the £69 iPod Shuffle, for instance. So it's not a huge amount of memory on your phone. But I suppose, as I say, it's the fact that they're doing it and they're saying, look, this is a Walkman. And this could be the first in a long line of Walkman. And Walkman is the brand that really, you know, stands for portable music, or at least it did, until Apple came out with iPod. We'll have to wait and see how good the product is.
Multimedia news.
Well, it's certainly been a mixed show so far. And to round up, we've got, as always, the news in the world of technology and the internet. And we've come down to the basement of the PC Pro building in central London and talked to news and features editor Paul Trotter. Back again, a holiday month this month. Have you been anywhere? Are you going anywhere?
Actually, yes, I'm just off tomorrow to Portugal, so you've just caught me this month.
Are you taking any form of technology with you? I bet you've taken an iPod or something.
The only thing I'm taking is going to be an MP3 player. That's the only thing I'm taking. I'm going to leave the laptop and even the phone behind, I think, this year.
You're not going to check your email at an internet cafe or anything like that?
Absolutely not. I'm going to give it a go, see how I get on.
Okay, fair enough. First off, and quite an important announcement from Microsoft is that more details revealed about the next version of Windows. It's still a long way off, isn't it?
Yeah, we've known it as Longhorn for the last few years, and at the beginning of August it was renamed as Windows Vista. So that will be the replacement for Windows XP. Not expected it to be available until the end of next year, but we've already got an early beta version. It looks quite interesting. Some of the buzzwords Microsoft uses to talk about it are, you know, manageability, deployment, which means nothing to us really, but this is really about increased security and a nice-looking interface.
So what will it give us? Are we still going to have that situation where every time they bring out a new version of Windows, people just sit there trying to poke holes in it, and at the moment it seems they're being quite successful?
I think that the day after the beta was released, someone revealed that they thought they'd written a virus for it. So Microsoft was already on the back foot, but it is important to note that this is a very early version. But the security aspect of it is going to be central to this. So Microsoft has been developing it for 5 years. It'll be 5 years since XP was released when Vista is actually available. So their reputation is on the line here.
What will it bring for your average home user then? I mean, will it, apart from obviously allegedly being more secure, will there be more bells and whistles in it?
It looks nicer. I mean, it's not quite a 3D interface, but there's a transparent interface to a certain degree around some of the pop-up windows. One of the things they're also making a big thing of is the search functionality, which has been historically bad on Windows. That's why we've had things like Google Desktop Search becoming more and more important. But in Vista, there's a new search application that should make things like Google redundant to a certain degree.
Okay, so we know it's going to be called Windows Vista. We don't know too much more than that, but obviously watch this space as always, and we'll tell you more as we get it. There's a new site which is claiming it's the UK first for legal video downloads as opposed to music downloads.
That's right, we've had music downloads, and of course video swapping on the internet has been big for the last few years. But we've never had a legal way of downloading TV and video programmes. So this new company, the British Internet Broadcasting Corporation, the BIBC, sounds rather familiar, doesn't it? But nothing to do with the BBC, is producing a service now which will let people download TV programmes initially. I suppose the problem here is that the copyright owners haven't backed it so far, but the company claims to be in discussions with a number of suppliers, including ITN.
Now, I would assume that it's the big series that the people want to get hold of, and obviously the big movies, where you've already starting to see services of this type appear in America, but at the moment it's only to people living in America. You can't even subscribe to them if you're outside the US.
Yeah, content is king here, and if you're not able to download movies and the biggest TV programmes, then this isn't going to work. But it'll be interesting to see over the next few months whether they get any company signing up to it.
In London, we've got a service where it does video on demand called Home Choice, and that's basically using broadband to deliver TV programmes that you select from your remote control. But it's only a very limited service. It's only in a small part of the UK at the moment, and it's also doesn't have this huge library that, say, if you went to a large DVD store, you'd get a lot more there than you would be able to access online.
this sort of thing in terms of availability of content over broadband initially is only going to be available in certain parts, the built-up areas like London, where there are lots of potential subscribers. So that wouldn't be available across the country initially. And again, you know, the content and having speeds quick enough to be able to download and watch this sort of thing, very important. We've talked about high-speed broadband services for the last few months. We've got NTL and TeleWest also signing up to that and offering 10 megabits per second from the first part of next year. So it'll definitely be something interesting to watch, but most people might have to wait for a while.
Harking back finally to earlier on in the show, we were hearing about the new Sony phone Walkman. That's a Walkman and a phone. Obviously, they're saying it's a hugely significant thing. Is that the case?
Not at this stage. I think the memory stick you get with it at the moment is 512 megabytes, where most iPods and media players have more than that, not necessarily the iPod Shuffle. But what Sony does have, of course, is an amazing brand. Whereas the iPod is the brand of portable media players, the Walkman before it has been the brand for portable music, you know, for the last 20 years or so. So they'll have that behind them. But in terms of the technology, most technology fans will probably be looking to some other kind of portable equipment.
I know their great rival Nokia has a phone that's due to come out around the end of the year, beginning of next year, and that will have a 4 gigabyte hard drive built in, which is a serious amount of storage for a phone.
That would be the benchmark for the other suppliers, you would think, wouldn't you? You should be able to store, you know, a decent amount of music on there. So it'll be interesting to see how Sony matches up with Nokia in that respect as the months go on.
I think the thing that worries me most of all, though, is if you spend a day at work or whatever you're doing, listening to tunes on your phone, you come to make a couple of phone calls and you find that the battery's flat. It remains to be seen how well they cope with that sort of thing.
I think so, yes. I mean, some phones, you know, will last only a day if you're on the phone all the time anyway, but if you're listening to music on the way to work and the way home, so you're listening to music constantly for 2 or 3 hours a day, that's going to have a big effect on the battery, so that's going to be important.
To find out about all the latest technology news, check out the PC Pro website, which is pcpro.co.uk. Paul Trotter is the news and features editor. Just before you go, as you know, we've got these digital doorbells, the latest digital device. Have you had an idea of what you might upload to yours as a sample if we gave you one?
Well, you've put me on the spot a little bit there. I think I'd probably record my own. I probably couldn't tell you the language I'd use, but it'd be anything to get rid of those nuisance knockers.
Go away, knockers! I can see it now. Paul, thank you very much indeed.
Cheers.
And that's about it for BFBS Multimedia. Whether you're listening to us on FM or on the Listen Again feature or on a podcast, I hope you've enjoyed the show, and I hope that you will take part in this month's competition, because we are really excited and really looking forward to getting some of these answers.
Entries to multimedia@bfbs.com. What tune would you like should you be lucky enough to win one of these amazing Byron digital doorbells? And if you have the technology and can find the audio, send us that audio as well, about 15 or 20 seconds. That's all it needs to be, is an MP3 file to multimedia@bfbs.com, and we'll draw the winners out in a month's time. From me, Dave Raven.
And from me, Mark Phillips.
Bye-bye.
Ta-ra.